Deuteronomy. If you looked at it this week, tell me what it was that struck you about this. Anything? Long sermon? Sometimes they just stretch out. He ran through a bunch of, he walked them through it all, didn't he? It's, as I think about it, I think about somebody looking back on their life and just kind of just talking. And that's what we see here. What else? Anything? There was a significant point that was subtle. He didn't come out and say it, but there was a subtle message in here, and hopefully we'll get to it. In chapter 1, verse 8, we remember, or verse 6, the Lord our God spake to us in Horeb, saying, you have dwelt long enough in this mount. So we're walking, we're going through this whole journey again and reviewing it. You know, the Deuteronomy, the law, and then Deuteronomy, so we talk about the second, okay? So the second giving of the law. Well, this was a revisit of all their history, of their journey, because here's what happens. They're coming up on, they're approaching the moment when they're going to be able to go into the promised land. So they're almost there. So he says, look at what we've been through. Look at what's happened to get us where we are. And, you know, I think it does us all well to do this from time to time, to look back on our lives and to see the challenges that we faced. And, you know, I was telling somebody, and I've said it here before, and the Bible pretty much just, it doesn't say it exactly this plainly, but a guy was complaining about his life, and I said, but you've survived every day so far. You know, every day so far, you made it. And so we got to kind of keep it in perspective that, yeah, we've had some hard times, but we survived. We've survived. And that's what we're talking about here. Verse 8, behold, I have set the land before you. Go in and possess the land which the Lord sware unto your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give to them and to their seed after them. And then Moses pauses here as he's speaking in verse 9. He says, and I told God, right? I spake unto you at that time, I'm not able to bear you myself alone. I can't do this by myself. And we all have to come to a point where we realize this is something we can't do alone. There are some things in our lives that we're the only one that can do it. And we have to do it. But we've got to learn to, delegate so much, but to share the workload and let other people be involved. And that was one of Moses. Why do we not share the workload? Embarrassment, pride, independence. Don't want to impose. Because we want it done right and we don't trust other people. That's really the reason. It's really what it comes down to is we don't have the confidence in the competence of other people. Yeah, that's what happens. And part of the prayer is, Lord, show me my part. Show me what I, because we can't do everything. But if God has a part for us in it, we need to fulfill that role. And if God has no part for us in it, then we need to back away. And that is part of the prayer. So he says, I'm not able to bear you myself alone. And God never asked him to do that. What did he tell him to do? He said, I want you to go to Pharaoh and tell Pharaoh, let my people go, that they may serve me. Right? And of course, he had that speech impediment. And God said, that's not an excuse. Your brother's on his way here. He can be the mouthpiece. You can be the brains of the operation. And so that's how it worked. So he was never, never by himself. Guys, that's another thing we got to figure out. We're never as isolated as we might think we are. We may feel completely alone, but there are other people, number one, who care. There are other people who understand. There are other people who will help if we'll let them. And maybe are helping and we don't see their their contribution at this point yet. Verse 12, how can I myself alone bear your cumbrance, your burden, your strife? So we see, excuse me, Moses' impression of the people. And so he says in verse number 15, so I took the chief of your tribes, wise men, known, and made them heads over you, captains over thousands, over hundreds, over fifties, over tens, and officers among your tribes. So they established a government. They established representation and leadership. Verse 17, ye shall not respect persons in judgment. Ye shall hear the small as well as the great. Shall not be afraid of the face of man, for the judgment is God's, and the cause that is too hard for you, bring it to me, and I will hear it. So as he's assigning these officers and these captains their roles, he says, look, you judge, you mediate, you mitigate, you solve it. And if it's too hard for you, just kick it up to me, and we'll take care of it. That should not be so much. But the fairness, this idea of blind justice, you have any examples of that? Probably the greatest example to me is when Nathan came to David and told him that story about a poor man with a lamb, only one lamb, and the rich man next door had many, many flocks. And David said, oh, he needs to pay. Blind justice. Nathan said, just you. Thou art the man. So we look at circumstances, and I've seen people, and I've identified it in myself over the years, where I could judge somebody else differently than I would judge it if it were me. Anybody else have that? Right? So their sins, what's that? Right. They don't understand. That's right. It's always different. And it's, I think it was Brother Terry that told me the difference between major surgery and minor surgery. Major surgery is if they're cutting on me, right? That's always major surgery. So that judgment, that blind justice to be able to say what is fair and what is right without having a bias or a bend toward people and giving them some kind of preference. Verse 21, the Lord thy God has set the land before thee. Go up and possess it. And the Lord God of thy fathers has said to thee, fear not, neither be discouraged. And why would God say that? Because he knew it was going to be a daunting task. Right? They look at it and go, whoa, I don't know if we can do this. And God said, don't be afraid. Don't be discouraged. There's an element of fear in there. There's an element of discouragement in it. And that's the reason that God said, don't let it get to you. In verse number 26, notwithstanding, you would not go up, but you rebelled against the commandment of the Lord. Verse 27, and you murmured in your tents, complainers. There's a difference between murmuring, just complaining to be complaining, and trying to solve problems. We can identify a problem and work toward a resolution, but then on the other hand, there's just complaining, not trying to solve it, just talking misery. Whining. That's it. He goes on and he says in verse number 29, dread not, neither be afraid of them. Verse 32, yet in this thing you did not believe the Lord your God. Do we believe God? Do we trust him? Do we trust him in the hard times? Do we trust him in the valley of the shadow of death? Do we trust him at all times? Or is there, well, I trust him up to here, but beyond that, I don't trust him. He said you didn't trust him. You did not believe him. And so God, verse 34, Lord heard the voice of your words and was wroth and sware, saying, surely, there shall not one of these men of this evil generation see that good land which I swear to give unto your fathers. It's there. The land is there. The harvest is ready. The houses are built, the buildings, the fences, it's all there. And all you got to do is go accept it. But they wouldn't do it. They murmured and complained and showed their fear, and they doubted God. And so God says in verse 39, your little ones, which you said should be a prey, your children, which in that day had no knowledge between good and evil, they shall go in there. Unto them will I give it, and they shall possess it. So he says the children can have it, but as far as the ones who are supposed to know better, you're not going in, you're done. And so left them in the wilderness. And verse 44, the Amorites which dwelt in that mountain came out against you and chased you as bees do. I just thought that was neat. Any of you ever been chased by bees? We say bees, yellow jackets. Those things come up out of the ground and chase after you. Ooh, you better run. Leave the lawnmower running. That's right. Just take off. Yeah. In chapter 2, we start talking about the different places. And I will tell you that this is where that subtlety is. And I just want to see if you can pick up on it. Verse 1, we turned and took our journey into the wilderness by the way of the Red Sea. As the Lord spake to me, we compassed Mount Seir many days. And the Lord spake, verse 3, ye have compassed this mountain long enough. Turn you northward. And verse number 5, talking about the children of Esau which dwell in Seir, he says, meddle not with them. How many of you remember what I tell the kids why I'm so happy? Because I know how to mind my own business. And I always ask them when they're in meddling in somebody else's affairs. I say, you want to know why I'm so happy? And they can answer it just as quickly as she did. Because you know how to mind your own business. I said, exactly right. Which one? That? Yeah, I sing that to them too. I looked that one up and let them listen to it. They know the words of that one too. But as they're journeying, where are they going? They're going to Promised Land, going to Canaan. And there are going to be lots of people, lots of kings along the way. And God says, don't mess with them. There's no reason to get drawn into a squabble unnecessarily. And so as they approached each one, now remember, this is a long line of people. And cattle, and furniture, and whatever. And so as this nation passes by these villages and these little nations, they have to send a messenger ahead and say, hey, look, we're coming through, and we're going to stay on the road. We don't want you messing with us. Don't want you to wonder what it's all about. But maybe we could buy some food while we're in town and maybe use some of your water and maybe feed our animals. And they kept getting met by resistance. Right? No, you can't. And not only did they say, we won't share and we won't sell to you, but some of them came out and attacked them. And that's what chapter 2 is about. Verse 9, the Lord said unto me, distress not the Moabites, neither contend with them in battle, for I will not give thee their land for possession. I have given Ar to the children of Lot for possession. Verse 10, and the Emims, or the Amims, dwelt therein in times past, a people great, many, and tall as the Anakims, which also were accounted giants as the Anakims. And the Moabites called them Amims. The Horims also dwelt in Seir before time, but the children of Esau succeeded them, when they destroyed them from before them. Did you pick up on that yet? Verse 19. When thou comest nigh over against the children of Ammon, distress them not, nor meddle with them. I'll not give thee the land of the children of Ammon any possession, because I have given it to the children of Lot for a possession. Verse 20. this also was accounted a land of giants. Giants dwelt there in old time. And the Ammonites called them Zamzumims, a people great and many and tall as the Anakims. But the Lord destroyed them before them, and they succeeded them and dwelt in their stead. You figure it out yet? And now God brings them through these places, along these places, and he said, yeah, there used to be giants there too. Next place, yeah, there used to be giants there too. Right? You're scared of going in and possessing this land because there's giants. God's not scared of giants. God can eliminate the giants, just like with David. But here, I mean, here's the, as they're traveling, they have given up early access, and for some of them, all the, those above 20, surrendered for their entire lives. They will never enter the promised land. Their children will. They have given up. They left Egypt with this great hope of freedom in a flourishing land. They didn't trust God. They didn't believe. Why? Because of giants. He brings them by some places. He said, oh yeah, there used to be some giants there too. Used to be. Guys, we got to trust God. God's not scared of giants. God can defeat the giants. Do you have something? That's right. All of our problems. God has a plan. God has a way. And he brings the river in the desert. That's what's needed. And you know, he didn't eliminate the Red Sea. He didn't build a bridge. He just parted it. He just made a way. Same thing with Jordan. What could he have done? God could have done anything. You know, it's like that little kid and mama said, what'd you learn in Sunday school? I said, man, they come to the Red Sea and Moses called out to God, and before you know it, there were helicopters and airplanes, and they dropped all this metal and created a bridge across the Red Sea. And all of the Hebrews walked across that bridge to safety. And the Egyptian army was pursuing, and then God sent in another group of jets, and they dropped bombs and blew up the bridge and destroyed the armies of Egypt. And Israel made it safe. And his mama said, son, is that really what your Sunday school teacher said? He said, no, mom, but you'd never believe the story she told. Right? God can do unbelievable things. Don't meddle with them. In these situations, don't meddle with them. In verse number 36, it says, from Aroer, which is by the brink of the river of Arnon, from the city that is by the river, even unto Gilead, there was not one city too strong for us. The Lord our God delivered all unto us. Chapter 3, verse 4. We took all his cities at that time. There was not a city which we took not. So Moses is just recounting this journey. Look, guys, we had a good success because it was God's plan. It wasn't our plan, it was God's plan. And we had victory. You'll notice in chapter 3, verse 17, the term Chinnereth, and that term Chinnereth, it actually refers to a musical instrument, but the shape of the Sea of Galilee, So Chinnereth is the Sea of Galilee.
And we, you know, it's just, look at verse, chapter 3, verse number 22. You shall not fear them, for the Lord your God, he shall fight for you. And I besought the Lord at that time. Again, this is Moses. O Lord God, thou hast begun to show thy servant thy greatness. Just begun. And thy mighty hand. For what God is there in heaven or in earth that can do according to thy works and according to thy might? I pray thee, let me go over and see the good land that is beyond Jordan, that goodly mountain and Lebanon. Moses wanted to see it, didn't he? Why? Why did he want to go? Why did he want to see the promised land? There, everybody wants to see it? I mean, what's he been working for? He has devoted 40 years of his life. He wants to finish the journey. He wants to reach the promised land. He wants to see it. Let me go, Lord, let me go. Verse 26, but the Lord was wroth with me for your sakes. Y'all remember why God was mad at Moses? Why? Because he hit the rock. God says, speak to the rock. Moses hit the rock twice, right? What did Moses say? He was mad with me for your sakes. It's your fault. It's your fault I don't get to go. Whose fault was it? Moses' fault. But now if Moses was here today and, you know, if we were having this conversation with him, we'd say, well, Moses, you're the one who hit the rock. Yeah, but they made me do it. They made me so mad. They didn't make me do it, but they made me so mad that I did it. Right? So it's their fault. What's that? All that murmuring. So, you know, he traces it back. He doesn't accept that it was his fault. He blames it on them. Verse number 27. Oh, wait, let's look at verse 26. But the Lord was wroth with me for your sakes, and would not hear me. And the Lord said unto me, let it suffice thee. Look at this. Speak no more unto me of this matter. How many of y'all have told your children that? Speak no more to me of this matter. I'm going to memorize that verse. And I'm just going to say Deuteronomy chapter 3, verse number 26. Brother Ronnie. Never owned up to it. Because I don't have any control over anybody else. Right? Nor do you. The only one I can control is me. And, you know, I figured something out years ago. My initial reaction to what happens to me may not be within my control. My initial reaction. Because sometimes, and in this situation too with Moses, sometimes it's the experience and the trauma and all the things that have happened in our lives so that our reaction, immediate reaction, may not be controllable. But it is when I can reflect on it and think on it and pray about it, kind of work it through in my mind, talk it over. I can sometimes grow beyond my initial reaction, right? You say, I can always control myself. Any of you ever get scared? Somebody comes up and goes, boo. Anybody? All right? But can you help that reaction? Right? It's a reaction. Okay? But that's based on my experience. That's based on what I've, you know, my life. But I can, beyond that initial reaction, I can grow, I can reflect, I can ask forgiveness, I can admit my fault, I can accept responsibility. Okay. So let's be mindful that sometimes people react in a way that is inappropriate. But let's not hold that against them as long as they can grow beyond it and come back and say, oh, I'm sorry. Come back and say, it was my fault. Come back and say, look, I was angry. It's on me. So that's a good point. Verse number 27, get thee up into the top of Mount Pisgah. Lift up thine eyes westward, northward, southward, eastward, and behold it with thine eyes. Thou shalt not go over this Jordan. So he allows Moses that opportunity to look and see the vastness of the land that God has promised them. And you can see so much from that position there on Mount Pisgah that he was able to see it. But he does here say, but actually what's going to happen is you're going to give Joshua the charge of the people, and he's going to lead the people in there. Verse 1, chapter 4, hearken, O Israel, unto the statutes and the judgments which I teach you, to do them that ye may live and go in and possess the land which the Lord God of your fathers will give you, giveth you. So what happens if they get to the edge of Jordan and repeat what happened at Kadesh? Right? If they repeat the sins of their fathers, they get there and they look and they go, well, I mean, look at Jericho. It's got walls all around it. There's no way we can conquer them. We just need to stay on this side of Jordan. By the way, there were some who, because of the victories, because of the conquering on this side of Jordan, there were some who stayed on this side of Jordan. But God gave them permission to stay on this side of Jordan. But if they got to Jordan and said, well, we're not going to go in and possess it, what keeps God from saying, all right, another 40 years for repeating the sins of your fathers? Verse 2, chapter 4, you shall not add unto the word which I command you, neither shall you diminish aught from it, that you may keep the commandments of the Lord your God which I command you. So what did Moses do at that rock? Did he add to it? Did he diminish from it? All right, you see what he did? He brought the attention. Where was the attention? The attention was supposed to be on the rock. And the miracle that God brought water from a rock in the desert. But instead, Moses made it about who? About himself. Verse 3, your eyes have seen that the Lord, what the Lord did because of Baal-peor. For all the men that follow Baal-peor, the Lord thy God hath destroyed them from among you. But ye that did cleave unto the Lord your God are alive, every one of you this day. You see that? You survived every day so far. Why? Because you did what God told you to do. Verse 5, I've taught you statutes and judgments, even as Lord my God commanded me, that ye should do so in the land whither you go to possess it. Look, all of these laws that were taught were not necessarily for the desert, for the wilderness, for the journey, but in preparation for when they would settle as a nation in the promised land. And so sometimes it's the things that we're learning don't apply right now, but they apply later. Right? And kids say, I never use algebra since, or adults say that, I've never used algebra since I got out of high school. Is that true? No, it's not true. What is algebra? And not just algebra, but geometry. What's it really about? Okay, functions. What's that? Well, it's really about challenges. It's really about learning to deduce and to analyze and to break down. You know, that's what algebra and geometry is, what it's about. It's not really about triangles and hypotenuse, right? It's about working our way through it and not giving up, not quitting. I'm trying to think of what it was. There was something going on the other day, and I said, well, the difference is I didn't quit. It wasn't that it was easier for me. It was just I didn't give up. I kept with it. And it might have been something as simple as untying one of the kids' shoes. Now, you could have done it. The difference is you don't have the patience to do it. The difference is I'm going to sit there and fumble with it, fiddle with it till I get it done. And that's, you got to stick to it. You got to stay with it. Did I miss some humorous comment back there in the back? Problem solved. There you go. See? It was intellect, not humor. I hope y'all can't hear that online. Everybody's sitting there watching their computer going, what am I missing? What don't, the nothing, nothing. Look at verse number 7. Verse number 7, chapter 4. What nation is there so great who hath God so nigh unto them as the Lord our God is in all things that we call upon him for? So he says, guys, who else is there out there that has this access to God like we do? Who else? You realize we can pray right? I can talk to God right now. I can talk to God, right? I can talk to God. We have that opportunity. We have that privilege to go before the throne of God, the creator of the universe, the Almighty, and ask anything that you will. We have that privilege as his children. Verse 9, only take heed to thyself, keep thy soul diligently, lest thou forget the thing which thine eyes have seen, lest they depart from thy heart all the days of thy life. But teach them thy sons and thy sons' sons, lest thou forget. Guys, have you lived with God? Have you walked with God? Have you experienced the power of God, the refreshment of God, the inspiration, the breath of God in your life? Have you experienced God answering your prayer, hearing your prayer and answering it? Have you seen God work? How can we deny? I talk to people who deny there's a God, and they dismiss the experiences that we have. But let me tell you something. I know they're real because I've experienced them. I know God is real because I talk to him. I know the Holy Ghost is real because I hear from him. I know the presence and the power and the embrace of God. We have that privilege. He says, lest thou forget. Take heed to thyself, keep thy soul. Who is in control of me? Moses said, the Lord was mad with me for your sake. No, God was mad at you, Moses, for your sake. It was you, your fault. Who has the key to my joy? Well, I mean, I can hand it out, right? I can let you have the key to my joy. But why would I do that? We have to maintain self-control. He said, keep thy soul diligently. That means that I need to nourish my soul. In my reading, in my listening, in my prayer time, I need to nourish my soul. In my rest, my recreation, I need to make sure that my soul is healthy enough to do what it needs to do. Myself, me. What happens when you don't get what happens when you're hungry? You're not you when you're hungry, right? Is that what Snickers says? We call it hangry. It's like, give them a biscuit. How many of you get a little tense when you're not when you haven't eaten? When you're hungry? All right? How about when you haven't slept? All right? A little tense? Boy. A little touchy. We got to get sleep. We got to get rest. We got to get nourishment. That is the soul. That is the soul that is expressing. Keep thy soul diligently. Verse number 13, he declared unto you his covenant, which he commanded you to perform, even 10 commandments, and he wrote them upon 2 tables of stone. Verse 20, but the Lord hath taken you and brought you forth out of the iron furnace, even out of Egypt, to be unto him a people of inheritance as ye are this day. Verse 22, but I must die in this land. I must not go over Jordan, but ye shall go over and possess that good land. Take heed to yourselves, lest ye forget. Lest ye forget. Don't forget why you started. Verse 24, the Lord thy God is a consuming fire, even a jealous God. Verse 29, but if from hence thou shalt seek the Lord thy God, thou shalt find him, if thou seek him with all thy heart and with all thy soul. How many of you ever were looking for something and you didn't find it immediately and you say, well, I'll find it later. Anybody? I'll look for it later. And so as you were doing things, you might look. If you happen to fall on the floor, you go in and look under the couch while you're down there. Well, I'm here. Might as well start looking and see what I could find. And then someday along the way, we were looking for some tool the other day, and I said, well, I bet when I clean out my shop, I'll find it. Right? I'm sure it's in there somewhere. And so that's how some people treat God. Like, well, one day I'll find him. Like, I don't need him right now. I'll wait, later I'll find him. He said, if you'll seek with all your heart and all your soul, you'll find him. How many of you ever look for something with all your heart and all your soul? You said, I got to have that now. I can't wait till I get time. Sometimes something will go missing at the house. I think one of the kids was missing a shoe the other day. He said, go in your room and look for it. I don't even know if he got the door all the way open before he came back and said, I didn't find it in there. It's not in there. I says, so if it was shoes, I said, well, where's the other shoe? Where'd you find that? It was in the room. Well, then the other shoe's probably in there too. So I walk in there and I look around and I wonder, where did he look in this chaos? Where did he look? And I saw on the floor there was a plastic bag. And I lifted the plastic bag. Oh! There was the shoe. The missing shoe, which must be worn to go to school, right? Right? So you look for it. He went in. He didn't really look too hard. You know there's people that come to church and they're really not looking for God? They know that they've heard you can find God at church, but they're not really looking. They're not trying. And then there are others who come in and they say, I'm not leaving until I find him. I'm not leaving this church house today until I feel that I've connected with the Almighty. Till I've found what I'm looking for. He says, thou shalt find him if thou seek him with all thy heart and all thy soul. The bell's already rung, so I'm trying to figure out where we can go from here. But he just goes on and he talks about how God has done so much for them. And, of course, Joshua is going to take over as the leader of Israel because Moses is going to be no more. And they create 3 cities of refuge on this side of Jordan, 3 cities of refuge, which are cities where if you have done something, you could go, and if you go there, you're safe and you make sure you get a fair trial. That's really what it's about. instead of them saying, well, everybody says you did it in the mouth of two or three witnesses, every word be established, and then just stone them right there. They give them a chance in the city of refuge to have a fair trial. All right? Any other comments? So what was the main point? The main point was they were scared of giants, and all these other places had conquered the giants. All right, let's take a break.